Our societal debate about genetically modified organisms, GMO, continues unabated. For part of society, GMO offers hope for crops resistant to disease and pesticides. For another part of society, GMO offers fear for the potential that crops do not function as we had hoped. A year ago today, Jackson County voters passed a local ordinance banning the growing of GMO crops. It was a big win for the anti-GMO folks, a 2-to-1 margin. But the ordinance is on hold pending a lawsuit against it, and there will be a hearing in federal court in Medford today. And this is the day we happen to hook up with Elise Higley, who's the director of the Our Family Farms Coalition, which was largely behind the ballot measure in Jackson County a year ago. Elise, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us a bit about yourself first. For the folks who don't know you, you have a working farm yourself, correct?
Right. So first and foremost, I'm not a politician or a lawyer, so there's probably some questions you might ask me that I will pass off to somebody else to answer at another time. But most of all, I'm got involved in this campaign last January when we formed Our Family Farms Coalition. And that's when we really realized that there was, you know, thousands of people within Jackson County had been working to get this ordinance on the ballot, or this measure on the ballot at that time, and were working hard to educate people. But the farmers really hadn't stepped in as much as they should have. And so Chris Hardy, who is one of the main, you know, the farmer who really found these genetically engineered seeds being grown near his farm, is the one who spearheaded all this motion. And then these, you know, concerned citizens got involved. And then the farmers were just busy. We get busy on our land and doing what we need to do and growing food. And at some point, you know, last January, we just realized, wow, I don't think that the public knows enough how much this really affects family farmers, the economic vitality.
January of 2014, you're talking
about? Yeah. So we stepped up, and over 150, close to 200 farms signed on in support. And we said, you know, it's time that we really let the public know how it does affect us here in this valley. And, you know, do they care about the food that they're eating? Do they want to make sure that we're able to financially and economically sustain ourselves, continue to export if that's what farms choose to do? And so, you know, we did step up, and so we took over running that campaign. And it was, you know, an exciting part of history here in Jackson County. And I'm really thrilled to actually be here today. You know, 1 year, it's like this emotional day. It's really exciting to think a year ago we were, you know, out in the streets and just really making sure everybody had their ballots in, and just, you know, we're on pins and needles waiting to see what happened. And we had never expected such an overwhelmingly supportive response. So
that was pretty amazing. I mean, there are very few things of any kind, except maybe for like the most onerous sorts of tax issues, end up getting a 2-to-1 vote. And this was 2-to-1 in favor.
Right.
Of the anti-GMO ordinance in Jackson County. It seems like you pulled together a coalition of people from, it pretty much crossed all sorts of political party lines and that sort of thing, because it felt like liberals and conservatives, and obviously by the vote total, that had to have happened.
It definitely was. And that was, I think, you know, when you come to a subject like food that you eat and farms that are your neighbors, and you hear about how the effects of genetically engineered crops affect their farms and their livelihood, you know, people do rise up and help. And that was one of the most beautiful parts, I think, of working on the campaign, is just seeing, you know, Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, I mean, people registering to vote that had never voted in their lifetime. And so saying, this is the most important vote that I'm ever going to probably do in my life, you know.
It seems like it had some coattails, too. I mean, which is obviously the political term. You mentioned you're not a politician. But,
right.
But the fact that the county passed a library service district and an extension service district on the same ballot.
Yeah.
Indicates you got a lot of people to vote who might not have otherwise.
Yeah, I think we all helped each other. It was great.
So let's talk about some of the issues that led to the formation of Our Family Farms Coalition, because you talked about Chris Hardy, and he talked about what was happening with GMO seeds. You mentioned that it affects or affected the vitality of your own farm.
Right.
In what sense?
So when genetically engineered crops are grown in this valley, we talked about a lot during the campaign when we educated people, especially here in this valley where the geography is so narrow in this valley and windy. And we have a really great map, and I think it's still on our website, that shows the area of contamination, which can be miles away on either side of a farm. So if a farm, say down the road from me, there was it looked like a Syngenta company had leased some land, and they were growing sugar beet seeds. And so anywhere within miles of that farm, 2 miles, 3 miles on either side, then that makes it so that I can't grow beets or chard or anything in the beta family and save that seed, which is something that we choose to do as farmers. Seed is just so expensive and hard to come by. If you talk to any farmer who's buying a substantial amount of seed, which in our farm, we buy at least $10,000 a year in seed, and we save a lot of our seed. Our goal is to, you know, try and save at least half of our seed, and that's a whole project in itself. And, you know, thanks to this measure passing, we're really looking forward to the economic opportunities that we have as farms to be able to sell and save our seed and sell it also. It's a big money maker. I know OSU Extension has a really great class coming up. We've got some of the biggest seed buyers in our nation are coming to Jackson County to talk about the economic opportunities that we have as farmers, because we do have smaller farms in general here, and you can make, you know, easily $20,000 an acre on a seed crop, and where some of the other vegetables you're obviously making maybe, you know, close to $1,000.
But if you can't sell the seed because it's suspect,
right, so what
then that's your economic vitality.
So thank you, yeah, because I can get off track. So the idea is that, say, I want to grow a crop, but I know that it could be at risk because it's in the same family as a genetically engineered crop, and I would have to wait. I would have to tend that land, spend my money, my time, my resources for maybe 2 years for a biennial crop, and then get it tested, have to pay that testing. And then if I find out it's contaminated, I lose that whole contract. So it doesn't make financial sense if you know all the science is against you, and you know, and sometimes you don't know where these GMO farmers are growing because they don't have to state where they're growing, and they didn't participate in the Seed Growers Alliance mapping system. They said that wasn't part of their business model, to be transparent.
Interesting. Much more to talk about with Elise Higley about the GMO crop ordinance in Jackson County, which was passed a year ago today but remains on hold by a lawsuit in federal court. There's a hearing coming up later today. We'll come back and talk more with Elise, and if you'd like to join us, pick up a phone or get to the computer keyboard and email us. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Elise Higley and your comments in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about Jackson County's anti-GMO crop ordinance, which passed a year ago today and is set to take effect on the 6th of June this year, barring any action from the federal court. There is a court hearing today. We are talking with Elise Higley, who is the director of the Our Family Farms Coalition, or OFFC, which was largely behind the promotion and passage of the measure a year ago. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So you were just clarifying for me off the air about the fact that there was a timeline built into this to allow people to get ready for the ordinance in Jackson County. So give us the timeline that was first envisioned and what's been happening since the passage.
So we're actually pretty much right in line. We had a year grace period for farmers to grow out and transition their crops over. And so that's what's happening. And the day that it would be in effect is June 6th. So we're still planning on that being the day, and excited that'll happen.
So, I mean, is this fairly fast then to get in and out of federal court, potentially out of federal
yes.
court in a year?
Which is good, because it's a painful experience.
So tell us about who filed suit, I mean, and how fast did this all happen?
Right. I think that's the interesting part, is it didn't really happen all that fast. And for me, as a farmer, I find it interesting that if you really felt that this was jeopardizing your farm, that you would wait for so long to file suit. And it was actually in November of this year that they actually filed. And we're wondering why, if it was that important that they waited that long, which is hard on the other side, because you're thinking, for me and other farmers, the 150 other farms, we considered this being passed. And so we started moving forward, getting contracts with seed companies and really looking at the economic opportunities and marketing opportunities we had to be able to say, hey, we live in a GMO-free county and look at what we can offer the world as far as seed supply. So we were really excited to move forward. And then when the lawsuit came, it was like, whoa, put your brakes on, don't get too excited, because we have a lot of work to do ahead of us before we're able to really commit to that. So like on our farm personally, you know, we're growing corn, and we got offered to grow a variety of different seeds and also alfalfa, and we didn't choose to take that opportunity because we felt it was too much risk. So there's only so much risk you can take on a farm. It's already risky business anyways. But, you know, we know that we have the potential. We'll have to test our corn seed to be able to sell it. And if it comes out that it's contaminated, we won't get any money for that seed because that's not what our contract's for. And so we won't actually be able to legally even replant it if it's contaminated with GE crops because that's against the patent law.
So you buy seed to be able to plant the crops, to grow the crops, and then those crops create seeds that you are then in a position to sell.
Yes. Yeah. And so when if they get cross, you know, if they get contaminated in the pollination process, either between wind or beneficial insects, whatever that plant's pollination process is, then that's when, you know, that's the hard part. If I really wouldn't care if somebody grew GMOs, if they chose to grow GMOs on their farm, and I, you know, say that's your business, but once it affects my livelihood, then it is my business too. And so if the GMO pollination stayed on people's, you know, property and in, on their own farm and in their own business, then that would be one thing. And that we really, I wouldn't have anything much to say about it. It's not necessarily what I choose to do, but I don't need it to affect and ruin my farm.
It's not like a road or a creek that creates an obstacle to movement for things that move on land because
right.
These things move through the air. But tell me about the issue then. I mean, how often does it happen? And is there any place then you would consider yourself safe? I mean, does it have to be, you know, 2 miles, 5 miles? Mm-hmm. I mean, is there some number you arrive at beyond which you think you're safe in distance from farms that do grow genetically engineered crops?
Right. Depending on the pollination process, like I said, whether it's wind or beneficial insects, you do have to be concerned always as a farmer. And there is, you know, just in non-GMO plants, there's cross-pollination that happens. But the difference is it doesn't make it illegal for you to sell the seed. And it's not, you know, protected under patent law. So I think having, you know, seed sanctuaries like this, you know, seeds, it's really hard, actually, believe it or not, to find seed. Most of the seed we have to get from our farm, a lot of times we get it in Europe because we can't get it here. It's not available.
Why?
And so because it's just not enough seed on the market. So that's why it's such a great economic opportunity for farms to be able to grow seed as well or to even save their seed. Like, you know, I said a lot of farmers here choose to leave part of their crop and not harvest it and then grow out the seed so that the following year they have seed. Not only do they save money, they don't have to stress about getting the seed someplace else, but it's also climatized to this area. So it's going to be a stronger, more vital plant for us the following year.
All right, so your contracts specify you're going to provide this kind of seed.
Correct.
That is covered by this kind of patent. And if you deliver something that is different because there was some cross-pollination with some GE, GMO crop, then boom, it's you're not delivering that seed, and therefore that's what you're saying it voids the contract?
It's illegal to sell a seed that's contaminated with GMO.
Illegal under
it's
whose law?
Federal patent law. It's illegal for me to save it and grow it out. It's illegal for me to sell it. So even though I had no say in the fact that my seed's contaminated and still am breaking
because you're growing somebody else's patent.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So now I'm now growing Monsanto's, you know, or Syngenta's seed, and I didn't pay for that. And so I'm breaking the law. And so as a farmer, I'm just trying to grow my food. Like, I'm not trying to break the law and be a criminal. And I don't feel like I should have to worry about that as long as I'm doing my business on my land.
You know, which probably boggles the minds of a lot of people who are not involved in farming, because I think they work on the assumption that this is a fairly simple sort of proposition. You put stuff in the ground, it grows, you pull it out, and you sell it.
Right.
But it got a lot more complicated than that in the age of GMO. And in addition to that, when we talk about GMO ordinances, there's a lot of different cross currents and forces that work against, well, for example, the fact that the Oregon State Legislature passed a law that essentially said nobody else can do this. Mm-hmm. But since Jack, you had it on the ballot in Jackson County fairly early, didn't you? And that's
right.
Why the Oregon Legislature gave Jackson County the exemption.
Right. And it is interesting, you know, just weeks after these signatures were turned in for Jackson County, that's when that House bill went through, rushed through. I don't know why there was such a sense of urgency, but suddenly it was urgent. And so, you know, I'm all about small government. I don't understand how, you know, people are deciding that on the state level we need to make decisions on what happens in our county. And I think the people of Jackson County have spoken up on what they wanted and where they saw the future of farming here in the valley. We really needed to kind of look at the geography and what kinds of farms people wanted here, and the people made a choice overwhelmingly in support of non-GMO traditional farming. So I say it's not, you know, anti-GMO. It's just we want to grow traditional seed, and so I feel like we have the right to do that.
Was there any attempt at accommodation? I think we talked about this last year, mm-hmm. leading up to the vote. But there were some attempts at accommodation and discussion with the people who do grow genetically modified crops in Jackson County, wasn't there?
Right, there was. There was conversations that started, and we also started the Southern Oregon Seed Growers Alliance or Association. We realized that there needs to be transparency, actually with all farmers, GMO or not, on who's growing out crops for seed, because there is pollination and cross-contamination that happens. The difference is that there's not this, you know, federal patent law that makes it illegal for farmers to save the seed if it's not GMO. But at any rate, you know, the farmers all met together and did a mapping system and showed where they were growing what seed crops, so other farms could know, oh, this farmer's growing corn over here. I better, you know, make sure within a few miles that, you know, I'm not growing corn, or that it's going to cross-contaminate the different types. And so when Syngenta was there at the meetings, they came for several meetings, and when it came to showing where they were growing, they were not interested and said that wasn't part of their business model and walked out of the meetings. And so that was, you know, kind of ironic when the opposition to Measure 15-119 was saying, you know, we can just talk through these things. That clearly wasn't happening. And it's different when it's not really your neighbor necessarily in charge or responsible for what's happening. Monsanto actually owns those seeds. It's not the alfalfa farmers that own them. And so
we are talking about Jackson County's ordinance banning the growing of GMO crops, which passed a year ago today and has a court hearing this afternoon. Elise Higley is the director of the Our Family Farms Coalition, which was the major booster group in support of the measure passing a year ago. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about Measure 15-119. You heard her refer to it by number a moment ago. Now Jackson County Ordinance Number 635. Join us on the exchange. Hear more numbers. 800-838-3760. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. You just brought up a very interesting subject, though, which is that you can mess up, even without GMO, it sounds mm-hmm. like your corn could mess up somebody else's corn if the wind blew the right way. So they would end up selling stuff or trying to sell stuff that was not what they are contracted to sell.
It's not going to make it not corn, and it's not going to make it illegal to sell. So that's the big difference. So, you know, the variety might change a little bit. It might not have the same quality, but it's not going to make it illegal or make that farmer a criminal for selling it.
All right, but the interesting statement there, though, it's not going to make it not corn. Are you arguing that the GMO stuff is?
No, I guess that's right. Yeah. So it's not going to make it, it's not going to have a genetically engineered, you know, DNA in it.
It'll be different corn, though. All right.
Yeah.
And the testing is quite thorough. They can always tell right off the bat whether it's the stuff they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, let's take a call. We have Grumpy John in Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Elise Higley from the Our Family Farms Coalition.
Hi, Jeffrey. Hey, I wanted to point out that we're not dealing with a one-time thing when you're talking about the spread of GMO. It's not like you've got dirt on your property and somebody else has gravel on theirs and maybe some of it spills over. These seeds can spread a little at a time, and once they're spread out, the range that they cover is going to be much larger. So you're talking about, well, two miles, that's for this year. Next year, if that GMO has spread, you might have a 5-mile radius, and after that, a 40-mile radius. The wind blows, folks. Thanks for trying to keep the GMOs out. It's down with Monsanto. Simple as that.
All right. Thanks for that, Grumpy John. Appreciate it. So that part he's talking about, though, where it gets back to what I was asking before about safe zones. It's just really hard to figure out if, I mean, can ultimately there be some coexistence, do you think, between GMO and non-GMO crops?
I really don't think there can, especially in this valley. I mean, we had, you know, so many, it was interesting, you know, when I worked on the campaign last year and again tried to find somebody local that I could talk to on the other side. Nobody would step forth. And that was my understanding, is just because there wasn't a presence of people that were growing GMO crops or that wanted to speak about it. And, you know, scientists came from Davis and OSU and Corvallis. And I remember one of them saying, you know, yeah, it's inevitable. Cross-contamination is inevitable. And if I were a farmer, I would be mad too. And it pretty much comes down to that. We had to make a choice on what we wanted to see for the future in this valley. And, you know, I'm really happy that the community chose to support traditional farmers, and I'm thankful for that. And, you know, I'm happy to provide healthy food, and I am really thrilled to be able to have the economic opportunity to have contracts for seeds and be able to not have to worry about it as much. Of course, there's always, you know, concerns, and you will still probably have your crop tested, but to know that in your county it's not a huge risk is a big reassurance.
You continue to cast this at the seed level, but I mean, do you have additional concerns about GMO crops and eating them, things like that?
You know, personally, I do, but that's not our stance for our Family Farms Coalition. I think, you know, what we're really looking at is the economic vitality of not, you know, traditional farmers, and GMOs don't help the family farmer at all. You know, they help the pockets of big chemical companies. And we can look at that through all of the House bills that are trying to be pushed through right now. I would love for listeners to look at our website, ourfamilyfarmscoalition.org, and please talk with your senators and let them know how these bills actually, you know, are worded as if they are protecting farmers. And you read them and you think, wow, that really makes sense. Okay, let's have mediations and talk through things. And but you look at who they're written by and who they're being paid by and lobbied by, and it's the chemical companies and Oregonians for Food and Shelter that are backing these House bills. And at some point, you know, you just kind of want to put your hands up and say it's enough. But at other times you think, okay, well, if I just stop this fight, then what's going to happen? So
you mentioned having a hard time finding local farmers who would represent for the pro GMO side, but it is a couple of local farmers who filed the suit against the ordinance, isn't it?
Right, it is, and they're being backed by the chemical company. And I mean, they've said that before in a press release, I think, when the lawsuit first came out. And when I had my deposition, the lawyer flat out said that this was being backed by Monsanto. So
all right. And so what are they seeking to do, just to block the implementation of the ordinance?
Well, that's what's interesting. If it was coming from them directly, you would think that it would maybe be an exemption of the crop that they're growing, but it's not. It's to stop the entire ordinance. And also,
and they're asking for alfalfa, but I mean, that's what their interest is in growing, right? But they're not asking for just that crop.
Exactly. Which is what you think they might if that was their intent. But they're actually asking for the ordinance to be withdrawn. So, and then also for compensation if it got passed, for $4.2 million. So.
All right. Let me get a look at the phone list again so we can let some folks in here. Here's Herb in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking GMOs with Elise Higley from the Our Family Farms Coalition. Hi, Herb.
Good morning. To what extent is ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange, involved in these proceedings? It sounds as if they've got their dirty fingerprints all over this statewide legislation and everything else, but I haven't heard them mentioned.
And have you heard something about ALEC being involved in this sort of thing, though?
Yes.
Okay.
In other states, but not in Oregon. But I don't have any doubt that they're involved in this, too.
All right, let's find out what Elise knows. Thanks for the call, Herb. Appreciate it. ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, usually a whipping boy for the left, usually doing work in state legislatures on behalf of the right. Any involvement that you're aware of here?
And not that I'm aware of, but you're probably right. You know, follow the money and see. It's usually pretty clear on where are these where the support's coming from.
Let's take another call from Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Elise Higley. Julie, are there? Julie in Ashland?
Yes.
There you are.
I'm here. Thank you so much. It seems to me that there might be a case to be made that that the GMO seed producers and farmers who use these seeds have a responsibility to control cross-contamination if that's their true concern. If they want to protect their seed and protect their patent, they need to be more responsible in containing their growing. And then the farmers, another aspect could be, if we were to write our own laws, if the farmers who end up with the seed they cannot use under the contract of their intent to grow non-GMO, if it ends up on their land, then it's on their land and it's their property, and if they would be so inclined, could sell it to the farmers who do use GMO seed. So, and for a lower price, too. So it just seems like, you know, obviously it's a stranglehold, and it's perceived that you're stealing our seed when really they are making no responsible actions to keep it from happening.
All right.
And that could be a case. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that, Julie. Appreciate it. Thoughts, Elise?
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to accountability, and these chemical companies are really, you know, their intention is to make a lot of money. They're not out to, you know, feed the world. There is, they're not there to protect the farmers. If you look at the contracts that these farmers who are growing GMO crops have to sign, like the fact that, you know, Monsanto can go on their property whenever they want to, and that they actually don't own that seed. It's actually Monsanto who owns that seed. But if it does contaminate another farm, it's not Monsanto's responsibility. So, you know, there's all this protection for them, which makes it just a giant mess.
All right. Well, we'll try to weed the mess out a little further when we come back from this break. We're talking about the Jackson County measure that, that passed a year ago today, banning the growing of GMO crops in the county. That is the subject of a lawsuit, a hearing today in court, in federal court in Medford. Elise Higley's with us from the Our Family Farms Coalition. We'll come back and talk more with Elise and take more of your phone calls and emails when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're picking up the pieces on Jackson County's anti-GMO crop ordinance, which passed a year ago today and is set to take effect on the 6th of June and is the subject of a court lawsuit because of that. It'll be heard this afternoon at 2 at the federal courthouse in Medford. You can join our discussion with Elise Higley from the Our Family Farms Coalition. She's the director at 800-838-3760 or by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Here's an email from Scott in Ashland. He writes, I know there have been many cases where farmers who plant GMO crops and then save the seeds for replanting in violation of their license agreements with the patent holders, i.e. Monsanto and its ilk, are sued for patent infringement. But has there ever been a case where a farmer who saved seeds from non-GMO crops that were inadvertently contaminated by DNA from GMOs has been sued for patent infringement? I'm not aware of any such case, but if your guest is, I would like to know about it. That, again, from Scott in Ashland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe there is. I mean, there's thousands of there's actually only quite maybe a couple hundred of lawsuits, but there's thousands of settlements. And so, you know, Monsanto likes to claim that they haven't had, you know, hardly any lawsuits due to this. But if you look at all the settlements, I mean, I know personally, if I didn't have the backing of our amazing legal team right now, you know, our farm personally is in the middle of the lawsuit, I wouldn't be so apt to sue Monsanto. So, you know, there's a lot of settlements that happen.
So where does your legal team come from? I mean, it's amazing if you and you're it's all out front there at the Our Family Farms Coalition, but you provide links to the original complaint filed in federal court and then pretty much every response since then. So there's all kinds of motions. Clearly, lots of lawyers putting in lots of time and earning lots of money in this process. So who's helping Our Family Farms Coalition with the lawyer work?
Yes and no on the lots of money. One thing I wanted to say is that, like you mentioned, that the court case is today at 2 o'clock at the federal courthouse, and we really encourage people to come down. You know, it's a public hearing. You have the right as a citizen here in Jackson County to hear what happens, and so we do encourage that, and we're hoping for a full house. So, but our lawyers are a mix of an amazing team. We have Earthrise Law Firm from Portland, who just is top-notch, and they also work with they're part of the Lewis and Clark Law School. So we have the entire Lewis and Clark Law School working on our side. And then we have Center for Food Safety, who is an amazing organization who is in alignment with our values of Our Family Farms Coalition and protecting family farmers against the threats of genetically engineered crops nationwide. They've been working with Vermont and Hawaii as well. So, you know, when the county got sued, we said, you know, hey, we have access to these lawyers, to scientists like Dr. Ray Seidler, to other scientists. We can help you know, protect that this ordinance actually goes through. And I'm really was happy when Magistrate Clark agreed to have us actually intervene. And so we've been working closely with the county.
Why is it in federal court when it is being challenged under the state's right to farm law?
That was a decision of the counties.
Okay.
And so be it.
All right. And the county is the defendant in the lawsuit because it is officially the county's ordinance upon adoption by the voters. So that's why the county is the defendant. But you have been able to enter as interveners?
Correct.
So you have a standing in court.
So Center for Food Safety is an intervener. Our Family Farms Coalition is an intervener. Chris Hardy as an individual. And then Our Family Farms, Oshawa Farm, which is my husband and I's farm.
Anybody who looks at this from a distance would think, well, yeah, right to farm. That would be an issue here, wouldn't it? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, the right to farm law says that you can't be held responsible. I mean, for example, people can't complain if they move next to an orchard and the orchard fans are going all night to try to protect the fruit.
Right.
Because those are farming practices covered under the right to farm. Well, but by the same token, I mean, wouldn't people's ability to plant crops of whatever kind they wanted to be covered under the right to farm law?
Right. So, I mean, we feel like exactly what you're saying is the right to farm law is to protect farmers, and that's what we feel this ordinance did. And the right to farm law allows counties to pass ordinances to protect farmers. And so that's what happened. We realized that this that the genetically engineered crops were putting traditional farmers at risk, and we felt that it was important for the economic vitality of our valley, and that's what the people chose. And it's, you know, it's not a common practice in Jackson County. We had huge chemical companies like Syngenta that actually aren't even legally allowed to grow in their own country in Switzerland, but yet we're here growing their sugar beet seed out and then, you know, not allowing the people who actually live here to grow their own crops that they wanted to. So it wasn't like we had a bunch of, you know, it wasn't really, you know, hundreds of farmers against another hundreds of farmers. It was, you know, hundreds of farmers against a handful of chemical companies and a few alfalfa farmers like we see here that were growing Monsanto's seed.
We have another call here. Let's go to Joe in Springfield. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Elise Higley.
I want to say thank you for your show. This is a great subject. To me, this sounds like an issue of freedom, number one. The freedom to feed my family what I choose to feed my family. And another issue is, it's like they're holding a club over every farmer. And not only that, honestly, every gardener, every individual gardener out there. I like to have a little small garden. My wife loves to go out and have and I have the right to grow natural seeds if I choose not to have what's called a patented product. But the thing is they're using the laws against us. You see, this is the bottom line. And sadly, our legislators immediately went out and didn't represent the people because the people voted in that county. And see, this is not just an issue of farming. This is an issue of freedom that every citizen, every American citizen has the right to feed themselves. I don't know if that makes sense or not. I'll hear your response off the air, and thank you again.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree.
So is the tide turning in some cases? I was rather surprised, and then perhaps not, when you consider that Benton County is the home to Oregon State University mm-hmm. in Corvallis, but that county voted on the agricultural rights ordinance last night, mm-hmm. Yesterday, and it went down in flames,
mm-hmm.
almost a 3-1 margin.
Well, it was written very differently than our ordinance, so I think that's something for counties to look at. I'm happy that, and I know that Center for Food Safety has offered their legal team for counties that are interested in passing an ordinance like this to talk with them and get the verbiage down, because one word can ruin a whole ordinance. So it's important to really make sure that you have the language down correctly. And, you know, I also wanted to mention that when we did pass this ordinance, we put that olive branch out to the few farmers that we did think were growing GMO crops. We didn't know exactly how many or if there were. We heard that there were a few. I spoke to one person at a meeting once, and we offered to assist in transition, assist both financially in new seed, in tilling, or whatever we needed to do. And, you know, our Family Farms Coalition and myself personally, you know, I really want to see every farmer succeed here in the Valley. And so we're all about that. And we're all about helping each other work through this. So, and I really believe it's the best thing possible that could happen in the Valley. And we can see that in other counties where it has passed. This just economic surge of agriculture. So,
you mentioned reaching out to the potential GMO farmers and offering to help. But was any of that help taken up on? I mean, were the offers accepted?
No correspondence was ever given back. So, I mean, we didn't call them individually because we didn't know who they were. But we actually put something out in the Mail Tribune.
All right, so you let them know publicly that it was available.
And we spoke to the county commissioners.
You talked about how a couple of words can make a big difference in an ordinance. Was Jackson County's off the shelf from someplace else? Was there some other place that it implemented that you copied theirs?
No, well, we worked, you know, we did talk with Center for Food Safety and different entities around. And, you know, hindsight, I'm sure, you know, it would be easier the next time around. Hopefully we don't have to do that again. But I do encourage counties to not reinvent the wheel, but to look where there's been success.
Let's see. We have an email from Mike in Medford. He writes, although I completely agree with your cause and voted to ban the GMOs, I understand the plight of the smaller GMO farmers who were just caught up in the storm. Was there any attempt to transition their crops to non-GMO through help with grants or funding? So many businesses need to transition to cleaner or more efficient methods, but they should get help financially to do so. That again from Mike and Medford, which you just referenced. You made the offer.
Right. Yeah, we did make the offer, and, you know, the offer still stands for anybody.
I noticed that it seems like part of the issue with Jackson County wanting this to be heard in federal court would be that there is a constitutional claim here, which is
right.
The taking of the land. And I see from Jackson County's response, its ninth affirmative defense is defendant did not take, in quote marks, plaintiff's private property for public use without just compensation.
Right. And we haven't even delved into that yet. So we'll see what happens with that.
All right. We have another call here on the line from Nicole in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Elise Higley from the Our Family Farms Coalition.
Good morning, both of you. I'm sorry I call in so much lately. You keep having these provocative subjects that I'm interested in, involved in. But anyway, I wanted to mention that I remember from the 80s there was a national poll taken about GMOs, and 80% of Americans did not want them. But like Hydra, that beast that grows new heads, the Monsanto kept finding new ways to get in to and have their corporation dominate the world food market. And to me, that's extremely frightening that any corporation can dominate food source, which is the main source of life. So I just wanted to mention that I really think they are really diabolical in their means, and they should be stopped at any, however possible, if possible at this point. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call, Nicole. Appreciate it. Any thoughts on that, Elise?
No, thank you. Yeah, come down to the courthouse today.
You have been very careful, it seems, as the public face of Our Family Farms Coalition, to not say the kinds of things that other people have said on the program today about, you know, evil and you know, conspiratorial, any one of the terms that have been attached to people who do get involved in the GMO business. And I'm sure this is on purpose. You want to make sure that you're trying to be as nice as you can.
Well, and also I think people have different reasons for not wanting to support GMO crops. And it's not my mission to try and change anybody's mind. I can have my own opinion about that. But I do know that economically, GMOs are a nightmare for traditional farmers, both, you know, economically. And so that's my main, and I feel like that a lot of people can understand that message. And so they might not agree with other parts of something about GMO crops, but they understand that it's not fair to ruin, you know, one farmer's choice to go to GMOs is not fair to ruin another farm's business.
Ultimately, though, do you see a future where there's going to be some incorporation of GMOs if there can be some perfection in the science to the satisfaction of all involved? I mean, because if you get a crop that takes half the water, half the fertilizer, gives you twice the yield and never needs pesticide, it sounds like a dream, right? But, I mean, if you could keep it from drifting, would you be okay with that future?
Let me know when they have that. Who's going to make money off that one? One thing to note, in the ordinance, we actually allow scientific studies and contain GMO growing. It just needs to be contained. And there is a legal definition of that. And so it's not that we're, you know, banning all growing of GMOs, but it needs to be contained so it doesn't contaminate other non-GMO farms.
Okay. Final call here from Mike in Arcata. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Elise Higley.
Hi. Just a perspective from Humboldt County. We just passed a GMO ban here in the county. And during the exchanges on the editorial page, you know, letters, there was one particular newspaper in the area that was very pro-GMO and tended to give the pro-GMO side real access, pictures, things like that, a lot more prominence. And then the anti-GMO letter writers were just letter writers. And that argument tended to be based around derisive comments towards people that were concerned about GMOs. They were, a lot of it was anti-science. You know, the people that were anti-GMO were anti-science, that they were tribal mentalities, and that they were, there was no proof that GMOs were bad for people. And it didn't matter how many times you wrote letters saying that it's not just people that are affected by this. The bees are affected by it. The neonicotinoids that are in some of the products that are produced by Bayer.
Okay, Mike, let's allow time for a response because we're running out of time. Thanks for that.
Okay, thank you.
Your thoughts about that?
I agree. Some people, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people that are getting, paid a lot of money to fight this fight on the other side, and you're always going to hear the other side. And so that's why we do need to really look at what's black and white and what we really can argue through law. And I totally, I think I hear your opinion through what you're saying. And I agree that, you know, there's a huge issue with the bees, and that's in part of our legal documents. And I encourage people to read all the work that all the lawyers have done, and also thank them, because I meant to mention that there's a lot of pro bono work, and got some really great activities to raise money still. So if we can talk about that.
Please. Yeah, we got a little time.
Okay.
Just don't tell us about what you got coming up.
So we've got the farming community came together. We just had a Kickstarter successfully run, and we finished that. And so we still have some community events. We have the Edible Applegate bike tour that's coming up. It's a 9-mile or a 10, oh my gosh, okay. A 12-mile bike ride.
Can they find these at the Our Family Farms Coalition page?
If they email us.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. So that's what you need to do. Thanks so much, Elise Higley, for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.